A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Mantlebrandt, as always, former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. Owen Morgan has announced his retirement from international cricket. We'll get the thoughts of his teammate and World Cup winner Mark Wood. England win a Test series. We'll reflect on their 3-0 clean sweep over the World Test champions New Zealand and hear from both Brendan McCullum and Ben Stokes. Johnny Bairstow talks about the change in mindset within the dressing room after winning just one in 17 tests before this series. And Jack Leach reflects on his first career tenfer in Test cricket. And we'll end the show by looking ahead to this week's rescheduled fifth Test against India with former IPL batter Abhishek Jhunjhunwala. Plenty to come over the next hour. You're listening to The Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2. Well, amongst many current and former players from around the world paying tribute to Owen Morgan, here is England's new Test coach, Brendan McCullum.
Time stands still for no man, and you know what his impact that he's had on English cricket and also world cricket has been significant. Obviously, World Cup winner, but the story of him taking over and to where they've got to, and now how cricket's played around the world, but also, you know, that's well documented. But also, the players that he's brought through, they're some of the games. Most exciting players, the superstars of the modern game, and they could only really get there. They might have got there anyway, but I think he got them there quicker because of the approach that he took. And he's a tremendous leader, a fine human being, and I'm looking forward to catching up with him and sharing a couple of reds and celebrating what's been a remarkable career as well.
Brendan McCullum paying tribute to Owen Morgan. Harmy, we'll get your thoughts in just a moment. But for now, let's hear from the man himself, Owen Morgan.
Owen, here we find ourselves. And thanks for talking to TalkSport, by the way. I suppose it's fitting, really. We're at Lord's. We played your club cricket. You made your debut for England as a Test player. And, of course, just behind you, emblazoned on the wall, is your face holding aloft the World Cup trophy. But here we are today. I mean, you've announced your retirement as captain, as international skipper. Can you tell us a little bit about where you were and what it was that made you make this life-changing decision?
Yeah, I suppose for the last 3 years I've been very honest and open about the day that my journey will end with the England white ball teams. And that day has come. I've spoken to a lot of people about the transition between, I suppose, retirement and the rest and how they come to that decision and what it looks like. And the resounding answer from a lot of people was, when you know, or the feeling just hits you like a ton of bricks. And for me, that feeling came in Amsterdam last week. It's a feeling that I've never had before. It's something that hit me quite hard and was quite a rough day. But given that I could find a way of understanding what it was and what it meant, made it a lot easier. And since that day, I've been incredibly proud about my playing career and captaining the white ball sides for the last 7 years. Has been an unbelievable privilege to lead a fantastic group of great men and people, and it's made me content about everything that's happened. So I'm looking forward to the future. I think the future of English cricket is incredibly exciting. There's been some many important appointments over the last month and a half. New Red Bull coach, new Red Bull captain, new White Bull coach. And I'm sure the appointment of the new White Bull captain will be an excellent one. We have some fantastic leaders. I think the cricket that we're playing in all three formats at the moment is incredibly positive. We have a couple of World Cups around the corner that we've been preparing for. So I'm incredibly excited sitting here as a fan at the moment.
You've been described as the greatest English limited overs captain of all time. You, of course, are the only person, the only man to hold a Men's World Cup trophy aloft. Did captaincy always suit you? Did it always feel comfortable?
I tell you what, it wasn't something that I ever thought that I wanted to do. It was something that happened, and it happened at a time where, you know, we were on our bare bones as a team, and we're going through a really, really tough time. And I was appointed, and it didn't get better quickly. It actually, the 2015 World Cup, we were terrible, and we got bundled out in the group stages. And a lot of my lessons that I've learned and mistakes that I made were in that World Cup. And being allowed, I suppose, or granted, time to stay on post that World Cup is actually been a hugely significant moment in my captaincy, because having learned those lessons and being given the time to implement change of a significant scale has been hugely rewarding for both White Ball teams. We got to the final 2016 T20 World Cup, Champions Trophy semi-final 2017, and went on and won the ODI World Cup in 2019, which is was the ultimate goal and the ultimate plan. And I would say if I went back to 2015, where I learnt my most lessons as a captain, I would say I was a different man now than I was back then. And it's important to recognise that you need to change with the team's needs, you need to change with the personnel that you're working with, and ultimately always have the team at the forefront of every decision that you're making.
Are there any secrets to success that you either knew from the start or you've learnt along the way that you'd like to pass on?
There's no secret. I think knowing that from the beginning and accepting that there's a lot of hard and smart work to be done along the way is probably the secret. There's no magic bullet, no magic dust. It is tough, and a lot of people actually nowadays talk about a well-balanced life and how they like to balance it. And the balance in achieving certainly things in my career have come at a huge sacrifice, and that's whether you're away from home for the majority of the year or away from your family. And in challenging times, it can be extremely tough. And the balance is that you commit 100% to everything that you're involved in while you're there. So if you're away from home on a cricket tour for the majority of the year, you are engrossed in that 100%. And then when you get the opportunity to come home, you are engrossed in your family and engrossed in everything that you want to be. But certainly when the perception of being balanced is a bit of a tilted one.
What are you going to miss?
It might sound obvious, but over the last 7 years, I've been lucky enough to call some of the guys, well, majority of the guys in the team, my closest friends. We've built some amazing memories. We've been through hugely emotional moments, both on the field and off the field. And I will miss, making memories like that again. I will cherish every one of them, knowing that both I've given everything to the team and to them over the years, but certainly I'll miss making more memories.
And when you look back, and you were always, from the outside looking in, appeared to be a man with team first mentality and his eye on the prize, but essentially were there ever moments when, just to insert one name, maybe Jason Roy was teeing off or Joss Butler was doing the same or Moeen Ali, I mean whoever it was, because there was quite a few of them, or Jofra Archer was bowling at 90 miles an hour, was there any point you just sat there in the dressing room and you allowed yourself just that minute just to think, God, this is great, this is
to be honest, there were so many of those moments.
Good.
And I think when you have a team or a squad that buy into collective goal, And it's unique in cricket, because cricket, if you allow it to be, is an extremely selfish and individual sport. But if you get guys buying into a collective bowl or a goal or to play in a certain way, it is unbelievably powerful and lets you throw caution to the wind and take on risks that you might not previously have taken on. And our guys have done that. And there have been so many moments where Roy, Bairstow, Root, Butler, Ali, Stokes have all taken some of the best sides in the world apart. Our bowling unit, Adil Rashid, tearing through somebody, Jofra Archer, Chris Wokes, Dave Willey. Just the names go on and on and on about moments over the years that they've contributed. And I'm lucky to be a part of that and to recognise how special those moments were.
Brilliant stuff, Owen. Well, I'm sure that your teammates have given you a proper send-off, but from all cricket fans, you changed the game, you made it better for us. So thank you very much and good luck for the future.
Cheers, thank you. And a special mention to our fans as well. Without your support, you know, committing to all these things that we've done over the years would not be possible. So thank you very much.
So Owen Morgan has announced his retirement from international cricket and surely will go down as one of the most influential and powerful and successful captains in the history of English cricket. We're joined now by his teammate, I have to say former teammate now, I suppose, Mark Wood, England fast bowler and World Cup winner himself. Woody, first of all, were you surprised and are you sad?
I was surprised. I know most people said, oh, they could see it coming, but I thought that having the 2020 World Cup in sight, I thought that he might, you know, go for that as well. And I thought, I don't know why, I just thought he would try and defend that 50 over as well. But if the time is right for, or he feels that, I certainly, you know, respect his decision. I was a bit gutted, to tell you the truth, genuinely gutted, just because of the leader that he's been and, you know, what he's done for me and for our team. So I think the natural feelings to feel like that. But, I can take comfort in the fact that he's made this decision, you know, himself. He's thought about it a lot. And, you know, if he feels it's the right decision for him, then, you know, I would certainly back that up. It's just, you know, sad as a team that we're losing, you know, our greatest leader.
Has it come in the sort of last week or so that this announcement was on the cards? Because I don't think before the Holland series, I think anybody would have questioned that Owen Morgan would not be still England captain before the, you know, before the middle of the summer.
Yeah. When I think about it, I think, could he have gone on? I think probably, like, as a captain, he was well respected in the dressing room. I think, you know, certainly anybody that I played with wouldn't go against anything that he'd said or wanted to do. It was sort of like, you know, whatever his decision was, he had fully respect from the lads. And you could see even in interviews, people were backing him up and, you know, were loyal to Morgie. And he's often been a guy that, you know, throughout when he's played, he's dipped out of form. And then he's all of a sudden he kind of stopped scoring runs. So I thought it was just, he was, you know, a couple of low scores in Holland, he'd be absolutely fine. He'll come back in the summer and he'll blitz it and then go into the World Cup. And that's just sometimes what happens. But I think the way that he sort of plays and stuff, it was always that them kind of scores sort of happen. So I think a bit of a shock, maybe to a few people. I know he probably spoke to those closest to him. And I don't mean his family. I mean, you know, the ones in the team that he was real close to. I'm sure he spoke to Joss, maybe even more Nally, people like that, who going forward might, you know, step into the role. But I'm certain that he wouldn't have took it lightly. I've never heard Morgie, even when he speaks, I've never heard him say he's so clear on what he says and how he thinks that I'm sure that even this decision was, you know, straightforward for him and either met it with clear vision.
And take us into what it's like to play for Owen Morgan. You've stood there in the World Cup final. You stood there in bilateral series, good times, bad times, when things are going horribly wrong. There's a captain, just looks as though he's got a calm persona. Just take us into the insides of what it's like to play for Owen Morgan.
Spot on what you said, very level, very calm. Didn't, you know, there's been times where we've had where the coach would speak in a warm-up or in a group huddle and would turn to Morgie, anything else? No, nothing from me. If he only tends to speak if he's really got something to say or he feels it's important. And from my point of view, you know, I think he's always backed me and stayed loyal to me, even when I've gone through injury or times where I've struggled. He's always been someone to look after me and on the field, if I'm getting a bit of tap or, you know, I'm getting whacked, he comes over, takes his time to speak to you, makes it clear. If the next ball goes for six, but you've tried to execute, he's fine with that. The only time I've gotten in a bit of trouble with Morgan is when I tried to volley one in the World Cup. He said, honestly, boss, you didn't need to do that. I was like, I'm sorry, Morgan. It's the first time I've ever said that to say sorry to him. I felt awful. Left foot needs a bit of work. But he was great nearly all the time with me. Honestly, really spot on. Someone that I probably looked up to as a captain, a person. I think someone that has interests away from the game. So he had a bigger perspective in general. It wasn't all cricket. He got to know you as a person. He big family guy, loves his horse racing and other things outside of cricket. So I think all those interests and a bigger perspective on life in general sort of helped. And his big pal, of course, is Brendan McCullum. He sort of laid a template or a foundation of how New Zealand played and how he moulded his team. That sort of time where we were looking for a fast ball or a leg spin or a batsman that could take it on, Morgie had a clear plan and implemented that sort of thing. And because them two are very similar characters, you can see how the teams have sort of gone about things. And a very calm and level person, but somebody that was extremely driven and knew exactly what he wanted with a clear plan and focus.
And somebody who played with him for quite a bit and successful. What do you think his legacy has been and will be remembered by the England supporters?
I think he'd be remembered as the best England captain ever.
Yeah, very, very good. Yeah, I couldn't argue with that. I think he's been an amazing leader, an amazing man, and somebody who has transformed the game. And speaking of that, what have you made this week of somebody else you know very, very well? And that's Ben Stokes, who arguably is doing what Owen Morgan did in 2015 when he grabbed that white ball one aside and he took it to a whole new level. Is this Benjamin doing the same?
I think so. Leading by example, leading from front. I mean, I still remember Morgan. There was one game we were struggling. I think it was against New Zealand. And he came in and he played a slog sweep and got caught on the line, second ball. And everyone was like looking at each other as if, oh my God, is this the way we're really going to go about things here? I thought like you might say, oh, like just knock it around for a little bit. But he was like, no, this is how we're going to play. We're going to take them on. If you feel like you can take someone down, take them down. I think that's the way Stokes, I mean, everyone was shocked when he was charging down the wicket and struggling out. But I think he's put himself and his scores aside there. And he said, look, this is how I want my team to play. This is how I'm showing you the way. I train hard. We do this. I've got this mindset mentality. And he wants people to follow that. And I think, you know, it could have easily been, oh, what's he doing there? And that was a bit of a strange shot or a strange decision. But actually, he's sending a signal to the rest of the lads, look, it's not about me. It's about the team, not being selfish, putting the team first. This is the way I want to play. And this is the example I want to set. So good on him. And I would never have said, I mean, I'm always back in England no matter what, but 3-0, I was like, fuck, against the best team. I don't know. If someone said 3-0, I'd have been a bit like, I'm not quite sure, but he's done very well. I mean, everything he touches turns to gold at the minute.
Back to Owen Morgan. If loyalty was one of the key watchwords of his reign, he gave it and he expected it. He also, at the same time, wasn't afraid of making the hard decisions, was he? I mean, we get the impression that the players all knew exactly where they stood with him.
Yep. Again, spot on. Everybody knew their roles. Everybody knew, you know, how he wanted the team to go about things. He also wanted to know what kind of dynamic the team would have. It wasn't just, you know, I mean, we had, you think of the diversity. We had lad from Barbados, you know, lads from New Zealand, lad from South Africa. Like, we had different cultures, and Morgie embraced that whole group and got to play together from all different areas, backgrounds, whatever. So that just says a lot about him, how he can pull a team together, keep everybody on the same hymn sheet and pulling in the same direction to win that World Cup. But it wasn't just, I mean, the most pleasing thing about it is it's not just a one-off success as the World Cup. We went through beating teams, you know, across the globe. I think we only lost to India away. We beat everybody else, and even that was a tight series. So I feel like him as a person, loyalty was a big thing. He backed these players and, you know, he wasn't afraid to make big decisions and leave people out if he didn't think it was the right fit or the right time for them to play. Certainly, you know, there's a couple of times when even if I thought I should play and he explained to me why, when Morgie tells you, it's a little bit more easy to accept because you're almost like, yeah, actually, you're right. so I think, you know, because he carried that respect and he had that loyalty for you, you give it back, and you know, I would have run through a brick wall for Morgie if he wanted me to.
Woody, can I just rewind 3 minutes? You said we would be remembered as the greatest England captain of all time. There have been lots of very successful England captains. What is it particularly that you think that makes him stand out above all the others?
I just feel that you know, I can't be any more plain than that's how I feel. It's the first thing that comes to my mind. I think, you know, I've played under some great captains. Alistair Cook was a great captain. Paul Collingwood was a great captain. Joe Root, a great captain. You know, they're all good captains. But I just feel like Morgy, the balance that he got right with on off the field, with the team, with the way he wanted to play, how clear he was, how understanding he was, I just think he's the best. Everything you're looking for in a captain, he revolutionised the game. Our white ball team, we've got scores in nearly 500. You know, in the top three or four scores, England's all up there from the way that Owen Morgan set up the team up and wanted to play. And I think now, you know, other teams are now trying to copy the way that we play and go about things. And, you know, all these great players that have come through, Joss Butler, Jason Roy, Ben Stokes, they all come through under Morgy's sort of leadership in the way that he's allowed people to play with that freedom, express themselves, that no fear attitude, and creating a team culture. Morgy did that. I know that we've had different coaches, but Morgy did that. And for me, that's why he's the best. He created something. He's done something no one else did in English cricket when we struggled in one day cricket. And he brought home the trophy that we've never been able to win. So for me, he's the best.
Can't argue. You can't argue the way he completely transformed and changed, arguably, the way English cricket looked at the white ball. But he's gone. And now, how does England carry this on? Obviously, Joss or a Moen or whoever takes on the next step of this unbelievable juggernaut of white ball group. How hard is not only is that going to be, because you haven't got that comfort blanket of a captain that you can keep falling back on. But how important is it that you go on to fulfil what potentially could be another double winning World Cup, which is 20 overs and 50 overs, largely because of what Owen Morgan has set you?
Yeah, we want to have a sort of legacy as a team, and Morgy obviously has called time on that on his part. But as a team, I still feel like there's a lot of lads together that started on that change of mindset and change of team. So we'll be hoping to do that. And whether it is, you know, Joss Moore, whoever, I mean, I've been coaching your lad, Harmy, at the 13, so I'm ready to step into some sort of leadership role if the one is, but I'm not sure they'll have my name in there.
He got 48 with that bat you gave him the other day, so you've been teaching him something about the bat, never mind the boat.
Champion. But look, I think, you know, with whoever comes in next, we'll be on to carry that forward. You know, Joss carries a huge amount of respect. He stepped in when Morgy hasn't been there or he's been injured, and he's always, you know, spoke really well, had similar sort of mentality and clear plans. And again, he's another one who's very level, sees the game for what it is. And obviously, we keep wanting to push the boundaries and get better and better and better. And I don't think that'll ever stop when you've got people like Morgy, Joss Butler. These lads are trying to push the game further and further. So I can't see that stopping or being any different, to be honest. I think the group will remain tight. It's just very, I guess, sad in a way that we're losing the guy that started it all and who we probably, a lot of the lads in the team see as well, are real leader, you know. Mm. But it's time, you know, everybody has a time limit and now it's time for someone else to step in that role, and they couldn't have had a better example than Morgy.
Talking of stepping into a role, just to change tact a little bit to the Red Bull game, how impressed have you been from young Potts, Durham lad, to go in and hit the ground running with all the injuries of fast bowlers that have been obviously it's well documented, the fast bowler injuries we've got at this minute in time, but how impressed has it been from to see young Potts go, and where are you when it comes to, you know, the next step of moving forward, getting fit?
So impressed with Potty. I feel like as a bowler, you know, I thought that it might take a bit of time bedding into international cricket, but actually, he's took to it like a duck to water straight away. He's been a monster. He's never missed his length. He's looked threatening. The consistency is probably the thing that's impressed me the most. He's been consistent at people, and to finish as the highest weighted, I think that's a huge, you know, tick in his box against the best team, test team in the world. You know, can he back it up now against India? Can he back it up later on? Because now you think, well, with all the injuries, if everybody was available, where would he fit in? He's got the shirt, he's got the place. You can't leave him out now. I mean, he's done phenomenally well until he maybe, you know, maybe conditions say that we might need something else. But he's got to keep his spot for me. And, you know, he's done fantastically well. And someone that the challenge of in India, the challenge of South Africa, which will, you know, be totally different. I think I don't see why he can't rise to it the way that he started in this series. And in terms of me, I've started bowling off my long run again. I mean, I'm strapped with like the bionic man at the minute, strapping just about everywhere. But coming back, it's just happening a bit slower than I would have liked. The elbow is obviously still a little bit raw and things like that at the minute. But to be back off my full run, I was on the speed gun the other day, 85, 88. So good, but still a little bit to go. Whether I can back it up spell after spell, that's obviously the next challenge. I took Ashington's Afghanistan pro down to training with me, and let's just say I mean I'm trying to get back and just, you know, groove my way in. Second ball went over my head, third ball went I had to go and fetch my ball third ball and walk about 100 meters across the square. I was like, mate, I'm trying to get my confidence up here. So
Eunice only knows one way to play.
Inviting him back. Exactly.
Eunice only knows one way to play. Mark, we wish you well on recovery to get him back fit, and thank you for your kind words on what is a sad day, because Owen Morgan is retired from international cricket, but a celebratory one as well, a World Cup winning captain. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tommy. Thanks, Manus.
In the end, it happened extremely quickly. England almost effortlessly knocking off the 133 still required when play began in little over an hour. And yet again, the New Zealanders put to the sword by Johnny Bairstow. Q Bairstow crashing his way to England's second fastest 50 in Test cricket history and ending things with a six off spinner Michael Bracewell on 71 from just 44 balls in what turned out to be a comfortable England victory in Leeds.
I knew that everyone would buy into the new mentality that me and Brendan wanted out of this team, but didn't think it would go this well.
That's all we've really tried to do. The skipper's taken them on a journey. I've tried to fill some gaps where they were needed. But the guys have really bought into it, and you know, they've been able to get instant gratification for that change, which doesn't always happen.
Sensational. I couldn't have asked for anything more from anybody else, you know, throughout the whole team.
It gives this team the most amount of satisfaction, and I think it, for some of the individuals within the group, it's how their talent comes out quickest and best. So, yeah, it's fun anyway. We'll take it for now.
England Test captain Ben Stokes and new head coach Brendan McCullum reflecting on another remarkable Test victory. England become the first team ever to chase down 250-plus targets in the fourth innings in three consecutive Test matches, and they made it look ridiculously easy, Harmy. You know, I think we'll be looking back and reflecting on this Test series in awe for years to come.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I think the way Ben and Brendan have gone about their message, driving their message, and the way that they've wanted to play cricket is something special. And it seems as though from 2015, Owen Morgan did something to completely transform and change the way English cricket seen the white ball. Maybe in the last month we've had something similar, and time will tell whether we've had something similar to completely change the way we look at the red ball by Brendan McCullum and Ben Stokes. You've got to have the players to do it, like Owen Morgan did. And I think Ben is starting to instill belief in this group that, you know, there's a win from anywhere. They've had their element to luck. Stokes is no ball, the no ball situation in the first Test. If that goes the other way, then you arguably thinking that, you know, we wouldn't be sitting here having the same conversation. But I think Ben believes he can win from anywhere. And I've watched two Test matches closely. This one not as close, but it seems as though he's not only got a team that's with him and believing the message that he's driving, they're actually going out there and executing it. And in Root and Bairstow, especially in that middle order, two senior players who should be standing up, who haven't, you know, Root has over the course of the last 2 years. We've got two players now who are, you know, banging form, and I can't wait next week to see what the next level of challenge would be, because India will be a different animal altogether.
Okay, well, talking of messages, this is what Ben Stokes had to say after the Test match.
These last three games they should have sent the message to people who aspire to play Test cricket for England over the next, I don't know, 2-3 years at least. And I would say it's the manner and the way that you're going to play, whether that be with ball or bat in your hand, not necessarily your stats or anything like that. It's the manner that you play is probably going to be first and foremost on selectors' minds, I guess, because all we want to do is, you know, build on this, and it's not just about us at the moment, it's about the future as well. And what I think we've done over the last 3 weeks is make people enjoy watching Test cricket again. You know, I'll always say if we were on the wrong side of the results of these games, but they'd played out the same way, but we had lost, I would have walked off a very, very happy captain with the way that everybody's applied themselves, the attitude that they've given to every single day, every single session, every single hour of these three Test matches. So I would like to think that the people watching know what they sort of have to do to try and bang the door down and get in this team.
Fascinating stuff from Ben Stokes. Before you comment on that, Harmy, let's just also remind ourselves of what Brendan McCullum said after the Test match about the level of aggression that England played with.
I hope we take it too far, because then we'll know exactly where that line is. I think, you know, until you do that, you're not really sure. So I think we've seen it with the England white ball stuff. There's been times where they've probably pushed a little bit too hard at times, and then they know. And I think it'll be the same with us, and we've just got to keep exploring what that line is. But it's not just about batting either, I think. You know, if we look at how we've fielded and look at how we've bowled as well, some of the field placements that the skipper's had in place and the mentality that the guys have had is constantly to try and chase wickets. Even yesterday when there was a partnership establishing between Mitchell and Blundell, maybe in the past in times there might have been a slight, unease about the total which was building up, but we kept attacking. The fields were very attacking right throughout. The bowlers kept trying to bowl towards mode dismissal, and to me that's part and parcel of how this team wants to play.
Extraordinary stuff. It's intimidating. So Brendan McCullum would rather the team was too aggressive, and I just want to clear up that we're not talking about swearing at the opposition. We're talking about being aggressive with field placings and bowling strategies and tactics and with the bat in particular. So what he's saying is that he'd rather England were too aggressive and fall flat on the face and then bring it back. They almost did. They were 55 for 6. It's just, I can't get my head around it. It's intimidating, Harmy.
It is. It's great to watch, I must admit. I keep getting people say to me, "Oh, do you miss playing? Do you miss playing?" And I go, "No, I don't." When I look at it, it hurts too much. I tell you what, this last month I've missed playing, because this is the sort of environment I would have loved and thrived on, because I had no interest in runs per over. I had no interest on scoreboard pressure or anything like that. The only thing I wanted to do whenever I had ball in hand, I just wanted to take wickets. I wanted to take wickets for the team, because that was my job, and I love trying to sort of play exciting and bowl quickly and, you know, bouncers and everything to get people on the edge of their seats. Didn't always work. There was times where I'd go at 8 and 9 and over, and captain would have to take me out for at least 2 hours. I would love to have played in this environment, because I think when you've got the mentality like what Ben and Brendan have got, there are times, and we are going to have times, we're going to sit on this program and say that was not embarrassing, but we're going to have people phoning in, tweeting in, or going, "That was embarrassing this week. It was poor. You see the way their dismissals are away, they give their wickets away." Sorry, you can't have that, what we've just had over the course of the last month, and not have, you know, the sometimes what could be a negative side, which would be we do fall flat on our face. We do make mistakes. We do get beat by dismissals or bowling where we haven't hit our straps, and we're going all around the park, and it has been, you know, the wrong, you know, the complete opposite to what we've got. We're going to have to put up with that, because if we keep driving this message, which Ben and Brendan are, we're gonna win more games than we lose. And I think that is something that is so encouraging for me watching. Long may it continue, because we have had it tough in the last few sort of weeks, months, and, you know, a couple of years. And I think this has been a quiet breath of fresh air.
There's a strange thing about sport and sports people is that they always talk about bad luck, but they never talk about good luck. It's like the golfer always talks about the bad bounce that he got. They never talk about the lucky bounce that they got. And that's okay. That's fair enough. But I must say, I got the impression that England did have the rub of the green in these three Test matches.
They did, and you have to work hard for that. And I think if you push the limit, the boundary limit, which is to try and be as positive as you possibly can, there are going to be 50-50 times in a game where, because you are so sort of front foot and ultra aggressive in the game, then you do need things go your way. And they have done this week, last week, and the week before. But I think they've earned the right for it to go their way because of the way they've, the nature and the way they've played. I think New Zealand have been a tad unlucky, but I still think England 1-11 has outplayed New Zealand in large proportions of this Test series. It reminds me of going back to, you know, trying to think during my time what this week or this month has been like. And I remember in 2004 we won 7 Test matches in a row, in I think 3 of them against New Zealand and the West Indies. We chased over 240, 250, and even more. I think we chased 270 at Old Trafford once. And I'm looking back at that, and I think, you know what? What place that took us. We came back, the Vaughan side went to the Caribbean, and then came back, went and won all summer at home, went to South Africa and won after the first team in a way to win away after apartheid, then to win in 2005. And it was built on something special, like the 7 wins at home. And we had 4th innings chases, a lot similar to what, if not quite as much, but not, you know, very, very similar to what Ben and Brendan have just had from a team point of view. And the transformation of the team from Nasser through to Michael was huge. And I just wonder if we were on to something very, very special here. And it would be great to have that, especially with the Nashers coming around the corner as well.
We should talk about Zach Crawley. He's probably the only player who's not in form at the moment. But then it strikes me that he is very, very much a Brendan McCullum-type player. And I guess the coach is going to back him and back himself to get his form right. And so he'll play.
Yeah, I think he's going to play. I don't think there's any question. You could argue Brooke is ready to play, and he is probably is ready to play. But can you chuck an opening bat, a middle order batsman into opening against India? I know India haven't sort of played a great deal of cricket, but I think the way that Ben and Brendan have backed Jack Leach, the way that they've both backed Ollie Pope, you're our man. Both of you are our men. We're going to put you in difficult positions, and we're going to back you and believe in you. And I think that's born to fruition. So I think they will back him again. My only worry is that I looked at Zach walking off second innings at Headingley, and I thought, I just had a thought that's he knew he was out before he was in. And sometimes there's a fine balance between backing somebody because of sentiment and everything that goes with it, but also you can take somebody out the firing line, just give them a little bit of a break and bring them back later on in the summer. Whether that's the right time or not, it looked as though that could be the right thing to do. But on the other hand, the way that these guys have backed Pope and Leach, especially coming into 2 challenging places, I don't see Ben or Brendan making a decision to say, right, Zach, you're not going to play this week. They would have brought another opener into the squad. There isn't a one out there, I don't think. Possibly Rory Burns. So from that point of view, I think they're going to stick with Zach Crawley till the end of this India Test match, and then hopefully he can peer the faith that the guys have shown him, and he'll get a big score at Birmingham. If not, then it could be an anxious sort of 6 weeks waiting for the selection for South Africa coming round a corner.
Johnny Bairstow scored now 400s in the last 7 months. I don't know which innings was better, Trent Bridge or Headingley, but I mean all of them have been remarkable. This is what Johnny had to say afterwards.
We're definitely looking at it in a different way of going out and being able to express ourselves, going out and being able to take the game forward, and hopefully be able to play in ways in which you're able to change games. You need people to stand up and change games and win games. That's how you win games of cricket. Whether it be a bowler taking 5 for 6 for 7 for, whether it be guys scoring hundreds, they're the bits in which you need people to stand up and in different scenarios, situations and circumstances.
Well, the bad news for England, Hommy, is that Johnny Bairstow has never been more established. His place has never been more secure. He's never had less to prove to anybody. So how's he going to cope with that now?
I was going to say, yeah, that's Johnny in a bad place, to be honest, because I want to question him every single time. He's not very good. He shouldn't be in the side. Johnny Bairstow shouldn't be in the side for next week. Because every time we say that, or somebody says that, I don't think we say it, because I think we all, by and large, love Johnny and think, you know, that he's very, very undervalued in the England, especially in the Red Bull team. But every time somebody does question his place, he comes out and bangs 100, a little bit like Stuart Brawley with a ball. So, look, he's been magnificent. He really has. I've chuffed a bits for him. And when you see him play the way he has done with freedom, you just wonder, you know, what was in the thought process of messing the guy around. This guy was batting at seven, keeping wicket, in a great place. Then all of a sudden you try to mess him around and he went from 3 to 4 to 5, all the way up and down the order. And he's now found a coach and a captain who has basically said, right, Johnny, pick that bat up and go and hit the ball. Hit the ball, the red ball, exactly the same way as he hit the white ball. And boy, has he you know, paid faith, and it's been brilliant to watch and brilliant to see. And to go and chase what he did at Trent Bridge was special. But he showed the other side of him, 55 for 6 when he walked out. How he didn't get man of the match, I don't know. As much as I love Jack Leach and getting 10 wickets was great. I'm a bowler, but at 55 for 6, England were out the game. No chance of winning the game. And all of a sudden, it was a great partnership with Jamie Overton. And Johnny did something that a lot of people questioned, which was, you know, Johnny gets runs when things are going well. Is Johnny up for the fight? Is when it's tough, and it's really tough, you know, where's Johnny at? Well, I'll tell you what, he showed them on that first innings at Henley, and it was absolutely magnificent.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison, as we continue to look back at England's 3-0 Test Series clean sweep over New Zealand. But next up, we'll talk about Jack Leach's performance and look at where it went wrong for the tourists.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Silly points slip in place.
And he's bowled him! Absolute beauty by Jack Leach.
My biggest thing is having belief in myself, and I think that's what Ben and Baz have really helped me with, and it looks like that's starting to pay off.
That's a great dressing room to be involved in. Everyone's so full of belief.
You kind of realise in the long format of the game where the teams I've played in, the way I've thought, you know, a lot of your decisions are made around negativity, and I think actually this new way, if you like, is extremely positive.
It's a great squad to be involved in, and I've been very welcomed, so yeah, it's a great place to be involved in, and it just brings out the best in yourself, really.
Jack Leach and Jamie Overton there reflecting on a remarkable test match. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. Jack Leach, 10 for Harmy. He didn't look like taking very many wickets in the Caribbean, did he, a short while ago? And here he is, knocking them over. I mean, did he bowl? There's no such thing as a lucky 10 for, you know, obviously. It wasn't a spectacular 10 for, was he? It wasn't sort of ripping it sideways. He bowled some very good deliveries, which deserved wickets. But he would have bowled better and taken fewer.
Yeah, he would have bowled. Yeah, definitely. I think we can say that with confidence that I think Jack's not going to get carried away. But I think the carried away he needs to be is... His captain believed in him. His captain said, you're my man, which took a huge amount of weight off his shoulders. And I think from that, I think Jack deserves a lot of credit. You know, you've got to remember, he knocked himself out in the first test. There was always clamour for Parkinson to play in both test matches. And then there was a lot of talk about not giving the captain control. Well, I thought he'd give him a little bit more control, and I think that's how he got his wickets. Bowled nearly 40 overs in that first innings, in 5 for 100. He probably would have liked a few more maidens in that. And I still think that's where he can get better, at bowling maidens and giving the control from one end so that you can rotate the seamers, especially in that first innings. And then he comes into his own second innings. And I thought he did that second innings. I thought he got the ball to spin. I thought there was, you know, was quite a good turn throughout the test match for the spin bowler, and I think it's again somebody that's benefited from the management's mentality of, well, you're my man, you know, no matter what anybody says, Matt Parkinson, noise from outside, you're my man, I'm sticking by you, you're going to play this week, you're going to play next week, you're going to play the week after. And I think because of that, I think we've seen a little bit more of Jack Leach. I think we've been seeing a little bit more of Jack Leach in all facets, which is being able to give a little bit more control, especially in that third test match. And then, you know, his ability to take wickets. And yeah, he was helped out, but which spinner isn't helped out when you get a bag of 10 wickets? So, you know, fair play to him. I was really pleased for Jack. He works so, so hard. He is the team, the ultimate team man in that group. For wherever you chuck him to bat, whether he goes in at night watchman at 3 and gets bashed about a bit, or whether he has to bowl when there's not spinning in the first innings. But this time, when the question marks were on, because he hasn't done it in previous times on third innings, or to sort of set the game up to win the match, he's done that. And that will be not only a huge relief to him, huge relief to the captain, but it'll give him a huge amount of confidence going on into his career, especially with a subcontinent tour coming up round the corner. I was chuffed to bits that he got the wickets he got, because it will give him so much, but it'll also give confidence to the captain as well, that, you know, we can throw the ball in the first innings to Jack. He can sit at one end, rotate seamers, and then, you know, hopefully in the third innings or the fourth innings, the confidence of taking a 5-wicket haul and a winning cause, Jack will be able to grow and feed off that.
Amidst all the talk about spinners and Matt Parkinson and, you know, the exciting option of leg spinners, Jack has clearly just focused on what he does and what he does best. And he hasn't listened or taken much notice of the speculation.
Yeah, no, I've got too much to think about. Like, I'm just trying to give it as good a go as I can and do a good job for the team. If people want to play and... then great. Like, and obviously they're going to pick the best team they can for England, and it's my job to just try and take care of me and try and put myself in the best position to be in that team. I can't control anything else, really.
Well, more noise that might be coming Jack's way if he's not going to listen to it. But there'll be talk. You mentioned the subcontinent tours coming up, Harmy. There'll be talk about Moeen Ali. and whether he plays now that he's unretired from Test cricket and where he fits in. Obviously, Mo's batted everywhere from... he's open, doesn't he? He's batted everywhere from 1 to 9 in the Test team. So, again, I guess Jack will just have to put his earmuffs on and carry on focusing on himself.
Absolutely, and that's all he can do. He can't worry about whether Mo's coming in or, you know, what Matt Parkinson's doing. Are we going to go back to try and get Adil Rashid out of retirement to play Test match cricket? But if England do need two spinners and they're going to pick another spinner that could come into the equation, then especially if we are looking at over the course of the next year that we're only going to play two spinners once, which would be in Pakistan, then it might fit everybody's timeline for Moen to come back, because he's not going to go beyond that. He's not going to play in the summer. So it fits nicely, and it fits in with Jack as well, because if Jack Leach still keeps getting wickets, then all of a sudden you're bringing just a second spinner in for that one tour, like we would normally do anyway. And why not bring Moen back in? Moen bats at number 8, play your two seamers, you've got your two spin bowlers, and you've got Ben Stokes, captain and third seam all-rounder. And you've got to remember as well, Broad and Anderson I don't think will go to Pakistan.
So neither of them.
I think Broad might go. If I was picking it, I think you look at it, you'd think possibly Broad might go. You've got to remember New Zealand's on the horizon as well. So I think if you look at it in the grand scheme of things, I wouldn't want to flog Broad or Anderson and waste the time going to Pakistan. Go with two quick bowlers if Wood's fit. Overton's chucked his hat in the ring. Potts, I still think Karst can do a job, would do possibly a job in Pakistan. And then when it comes back to New Zealand and more traditional conditions from an English point of view, Broad and Anderson walk straight back in the team for that. So I think it's about utilising what you've got and your skill sets that you've got. And I think that would be a little bit more common sense. So Leach and Moen for your two spin options, you've two seamers, and then you've got Ben Stokes to balance the attack up. And if you're smart, you'll be able to get your two fast bowlers primed and fit and ready to go for Pakistan Test Series. And then when New Zealand comes around the corner, well, Moen will be back off to play PSL. Leach is your one spinner. And your Broad and Anderson, after having a little bit of a break after the end of a long, hard summer, get ready for sort of February, March, go again in more favourable conditions for the seam bowlers. So common sense, really. And I think because of that, I think that would be quite a good thing for Jack Leach as well.
Okay, on the subject of New Zealand, a lot of people talking about how they underperformed, but they scored 550 and still managed to lose the first Test match. Daryl Mitchell, though, 300s in three Test matches. He added over 600 runs in the series with Tom Blundell. They did lose two big players, all-rounders in Colin de Grandhomme and Kyle Jameson. So, you know, Trent Bolt also produced a brilliant opening spell in the third Test match, which is sort of gone under the radar a little bit because of England's victories. This was Kiwi Black Caps batting coach Luke Ronchi talking about Daryl Mitchell's remarkable form.
I think mentally he's just been really positive in what he's trying to do. He knows his game style and his game plan, and he's sticking to it. He trusts it. I think throughout every innings, I mean, he's been quite lucky early on in a couple of innings, but then it hasn't sort of changed his mindset. He's gone out there and said, right, I'm confident in what I've got and what I'm doing and what they're going to try and bowl at me. And it's shown. He's just been a standout there the entire series so far.
Do you know what it strikes me as, Ahami? He's a mature player, Daryl Mitchell. He's played first-class cricket for over a decade. And there was just that... he played almost like with the realisation that this could be it. This is my chance. I'm lucky to get it because of injury, and I am going to take it. He's special numbers, an incredible series. You wouldn't say that he was a special player in any way, but it's just a senior player. This is it. This is the chance that I've been waiting for all my career, and I'm going to take it.
Exactly. Yeah, 100% agree. And what he did was, he's quite a simple it's quite a simple technique. He picks his bat up straight and he tries to hit the ball straight back down past the bowler. He doesn't try and hit it sort of funky through mid-wicket or, you know, big sort of expansive, wide of sort of extra cover. He hits a big drive. He goes hard at the ball, big drive. But more often than not, it's to the sort of left or the right of the stumps, which means he's got more of a chance of getting a fuller face of bat on it if the ball moves. And he's obviously got a lot, there's a lot less can go wrong in that front. If you start trying to pick big expansive drives through extra cover, you try and whipping it through mid-wicket. And if the ball moves all of a sudden, especially in England, you expose the outside edge, or the inside edge. So I thought he batted beautifully. He wasn't going to play in that first test match if it wasn't for Henry Nicholls and COVID. And sometimes you get a bit like Johnny. You question mark on players. All of a sudden, they're the ones that come good for you. But I don't think New Zealand could do too much more. I think they had similar frailties to what England had at the top of the order, where they got off to the odd little start, but not, you know, running away with sort of 1, 2 and 3. And I think if anything, where the difference between the two sides were, and I think that's where England exposed the 1, 2, 3 of New Zealand a lot more. This lack of spin bowling option for New Zealand will probably be something that over the course of the three test matches they'd look at and think that's where we were lacking a little bit. You ask a side to chase 275 on fourth innings on fifth day, more often than not, you win. Unfortunately, for two games, they've lost. And that's testament to the Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum message. And there are times you just have to doff your cap and say, do you know what? We couldn't have done any more. They've played out their skin and they've beat us. And if you give, like I said before, 275 on a fourth innings on a last day, and somebody goes and gets it, then look, yeah, you've just got to say well played to the opposition, and England were that good.
Yeah, people say that maybe this New Zealand team's coming towards the end of its cycle, that it's over the hill.
Possibly.
I don't agree with that. I don't think. I mean, they've got a couple of players in their 30s, but that's it. I think they were just outplayed, and they didn't get the rub of the green. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. OK, the rearranged test match, the fifth test match against India, will start on Friday at Edgbaston. And here to talk about that is former IPL cricketer and regular TalkSport 2 commentator Abhishek Jhunjhunwala. Abhishek, is there a certain amount of edge as far as the Indians are concerned about this test match? It's not exactly a grudge match, but there is a feeling, I think, amongst the England supporters, if not players, that that it should have been played last summer, this deciding match in the series?
It should have been played last summer, to be honest. But we all know the circumstances, what happened, and with the IPL being moved to the UAE and with the time frame, and apparently there was a lot of COVID breakout in the Indian team as well, so they had to fly back. But yeah, it should have been continued last year, and it would have been great when they played the fifth test last year and we had the result. But again, yeah, it should be a good game of cricket.
So much to talk about. I'll start with Rohit Sharma, who contracted COVID, seeing as you brought that subject up last year. But so if he doesn't play, we hear that Jasprit Bumrah will captain the side. So fast bowlers captaining test teams is becoming in vogue.
It is becoming in vogue. And I think it's a good choice as well. He's been with part of this team for a long time, and he understands the game well. I think they're looking at him as a leader as well. So probably that's what I just read. So I'm not 100% sure if that's a confirmed news, but that's what I read, that yeah, Bumrah is likely to captain if Rohit doesn't play the game. And it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing as well.
I was just thinking of his workload. I mean, he's multi-format, he plays whenever India really need him to play. But it wouldn't be a long-term thing, would it?
No, I don't think it's a long-term thing, because if you look at the history of Indian cricket, I don't remember the last time India has ever had a fast bowler as a captain. So I think it's one-off, but they couldn't go back to Virat, because I don't think even if they wanted to, Virat will accept it. So I don't think Virat is a question. The next person you could think about is KL Rahul. And again, does he have a guaranteed spot in the side? That's the big question. If he fails a couple of innings, are they going to start looking at others? So they couldn't go to KL for this test match. And with Rishabh Pant's form, where he's been, you know, there are talks that he might be dropped from the T20 World Cup side. do you give him the captaincy? So I think Bumrah is the safest bet because he's somebody you're not dropping for at least for the next year, year and a half. If they're looking beyond Rohit Sharma, I wouldn't be surprised if they're looking at Bumrah.
Okay, Rishabh Pant not being in the T20 side is a subject that I would love to come back to you on, and I'm sure that we will talk about that again in the future. But sticking to the Test match, what about reborn England? I mean, India, you know what? Is there such a thing as underdone anymore? I mean, you know, teams are routinely playing Test series without warm-up games of any serious consequence. But England, I mean, it is... does look like a reborn team. Three incredible Test matches against New Zealand, a new leadership, and so they'll be coming into the Test match pretty red hot.
Yeah, I think they'll be very red hot, and also most of the players are in form as well. And as you said, it's a great combination of aggression and at the same time, I think it works really well between Brendan McCullum and Stokes. They're doing a wonderful job. The brand of cricket, they're playing a completely new brand of cricket. And so far, so good. But I still feel that, you know, it's one Test match where if the brand of cricket they are playing, it doesn't click, it could backfire very easily. But that's for another time. We'll have to wait and watch. But so far, it's been brilliant for England cricket.
So you're saying it's all or nothing. It's high risk, high reward.
Yeah, at the moment, it seems like that it's been high risk, high reward. Yeah, two of the best Test innings I've seen in recent times from Johnny Bairstow. And he gave a lot of credit to the IPL. And as we discussed earlier, he's been playing IPL for 4 years. So probably that's the time frame you're looking at for anybody to transform IPL cricket into Test match cricket. But yeah, I don't think if he can carry on batting like that for a long time in Test cricket.
Do you think we're challenging conventions that have been accepted for probably a century? Well, I mean, that, it's not that long because obviously one-day cricket's only 50 years old, but there are many, many conventions about Test cricket that this England team and a few others before Australia, maybe 10 years ago, challenging those perceptions.
I think with Australia, it was again, Australia had some of the best players we have seen in the last so many years, and yeah, they played a very aggressive form of cricket.
And they were scoring at four and over, and we were all aghast.
We were all like taken aback, like, how can you score four and over in Test cricket? And I think they brought that positivity to Test cricket, and England now is taking it to a different level. They're trying to score more than four runs an over in Test cricket and batting very, very aggressively. And especially Johnny Bairstow in the last couple of Test matches, the way he has batted has just been unbelievable. But again, when there is assistance off the pitch, when the ball's turning, they're playing in different conditions where there's a bit more for the bowlers in the pitch. Can you still get away by playing the shots you're playing, the shot selection and the brand of cricket you're playing? I have a bit of a doubt there.
Yeah, there's a feeling that they might fall flat on their faces. And you know what? At 55 for six in the third Test against New Zealand, they came very close.
Yeah.
And then extraordinary rescue attempt. You mentioned Virat Kohli, the captain. What about Virat Kohli, the batsman? And another one, senior player, Chhateshwar Pujara, who seemed to have lost his place, got a contract to play Championship cricket with Sussex and absolutely killed it. I mean, you know, and so he will probably play, and he owes his recall, I guess, to county cricket. Is that the way you see it?
Yeah, I think 100%. And he did, as you said, an exceptional job when he came over. And that was the right move from his part as well. They're playing a Test match. He knew that if he doesn't get runs, he needs runs behind him to be a part of this squad. Because there's so many players in India, as you know, they can have three different teams. And they're still, you cannot question anyone's, do they deserve to play international cricket? Most of them would say yes, because they've got the numbers, they've done well in all Ranji Trophy, they've done well in the IPL. So there's so many players waiting for their opportunity. And if Chhateshwar Pujara is not on top of his game, given that he's not young anymore, I think this could be his last opportunity. But I just feel that he deserves one more opportunity.
Would Jadeja and Ashwin possibly play? And who would that mean one of them batting 6-7?
Yeah, I think Jadeja has done a wonderful job in the last few years as a batter. He's averaging, I think, close to 50, if I'm not wrong, as a batter. And so you can play him number 6 or 7 as pure batter, and what he brings with the ball, if there is a bit of assistance in the pitch, we all know what he can do. He could be lethal. And with R. Ashwin, I don't think India is going to play two spinners. I think they might just go with one, but we'll have to wait and see.
And who are the four seamers at the front of the queue?
Yeah, I mean, Shardul Thakur has done an exceptional job in the last series. I mean, it'll be very silly to drop him. He's done it with the bat. He's got India team the wickets when they need it under pressure. So I think it's going to be Umesh Yadav, Shardul, Shami and Bumrah. And if they go with three paces, then, yeah, you've got two spinners.
And Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad reunited, having been left out of the touring squad to the Caribbean. They said they wouldn't bowl together, and they have, and they're still producing the goods.
Yeah, they will. They're quality. Two of the best fast bowlers we have seen in Test cricket for the last decade or so. So you cannot ever count them out. And especially when they're playing in England, when the conditions are in their favour, they know every pitch like the back of their hand. They know exactly what length to bowl, where to pitch the ball, which soil is going to move. They probably know everything about there is to know in Test cricket in this country. And yeah, when you have that much quality, I think it's, yeah, you've got to play them together. Especially if they're only playing one test against India and where they have chance to draw the series. I don't think they want India to win a series in England. So, yeah, you've got to play both of them.
And if India avoid defeat or win the test match and win the series, which captain goes up to accept the trophy?
We discussed about this earlier as well. I think it has to be Rohit Sharma, unfortunately, because you cannot say, oh, just because Virat was the captain when they were touring last year, he deserves to go out there. I wouldn't be surprised if that happens, if Rohit asks him to go and take the trophy, because he's done the hard work, he's won those two matches. But will Rohit leave their opportunity being the captain, winning in England for the first time? I'm not sure.
And final question, India were playing a T20 series against South Africa when the main Indian team were preparing to come over to England for the test match and a series of one-day games as well. Is that something that we are going to become used to? The T20 team also playing, of course, in Ireland. Yeah. Currently, there are 34 Indian players on national duty. Is that... It's unprecedented, but will it set a precedent that will remain in future?
I think that's what the BCCI secretary has said, that going forward, we will be playing a couple of two countries at the same time, or there would be a one-day team or a T20 side touring somewhere else and a test team touring somewhere else. So I wouldn't count that out completely. And also, if you look at those 34 names, you'll go through that list and you'd be like, all of them actually deserve to play for
the
country.
There's none that's lucky to be there.
Yeah, none of them is just, you can say, they're just potluck. They are there because they've all done the hard yards and they've all got performance behind them, so all of them deserve to be a part of the national side in some way or the other, some form or the other.
The big three nations might have the depth to sustain that. The problem comes when if it becomes normal practice for the other teams to partake in T20 qualification tournaments or whatever they are, because that the depth doesn't exist in some of the other test-playing countries.
Yeah, I think when we're talking about this kind of depth, we're looking at three nations, to be honest, at the moment. It's England, India and Australia. And I don't see beyond these three countries who can afford to have 30-odd players who can play international cricket at the same time. Certainly, I can't see South Africa and New Zealand having another team of 15 playing a bilateral series somewhere else. You would know a lot better than me about the depth of South African cricket in terms of how many players are there what kind of a bench strength they have. But yeah, beyond these three countries, even these three countries will struggle to field that many players playing in two different parts of the world.
If South Africa could recall their players who are playing for other countries, they might be able to put together a pretty good B team. Okay, final thoughts on the test match then. How do you see it going? Give us a little prediction.
Yeah, I think it'll be a very difficult test match for India. If I had to put my money on it, I think England would make life very difficult for India. And yeah, the way they're playing at the moment, the brand of cricket they're playing and the form they are in, I would say chances of England winning the test match is a lot higher than India's.
That was TalkSport 2's Abhishek Jhunjhunwala talking about the test match coming up. So two quick ones for you to to finish the show. Sam Billings has been added to the squad. If Ben Foulkes doesn't recover from COVID, does Billings play? Or does Johnny Bairstow get given his wicketkeeping gloves back? And talking of wicketkeepers, what about the speculation that Josh Butler could fit in to Baz McCullum and Ben Stokes' test team as an opening batter?
Yeah, it was an interesting one from Kumar Sangakkara. That was a bit left... No, not so much left field, but there was a few more piped up and jumped on the bandwagon of Josh Butler opening the batting. Not for me. I don't think. I think if the selection panel thought about Joss Butler coming back in, I think you would have seen him as a replacement during that test match and then potentially playing in the Birmingham test match as a wicketkeeper for Ben Folkes. But I think that the selections of Sam Billings is telling you that they see, I mean, Billings next in line when it comes to the keeper, and I think they've not drawn a line through Joss Butler, but the way Butler's batting at the moment in white ball cricket, now probably going to be England's white ball captain. I wouldn't complicate matters by sticking him in. Not only back in at number seven, keeping wicket, especially going and asking him to open the bat. And I just think, you know, a lot of people are putting two and two together, getting five. I think you still need somebody at the top of the order who will get you off to a solid start. And I know Crawley's not doing that at this minute in time, but he's a natural opening batsman. You know, Joss is not in the red ball game. We've got to remember this: the red ball game and the white ball game is two completely different games. Even though England are trying to play a positive with the red ball stuff, top of the order, 1-2-3 is a very, very difficult place to bat. Sound techniques. And Joss has been found wanting in 50-odd test matches. So, no, not for me. I wouldn't go down that road. I would leave him where he is, England's white ball captain, and let him be what he is now, the best white ball player in the world. Let's not complicate matters to bring him back in the team.
We're out of time, but I can't resist the temptation to ask you, am I right in thinking that if Johnny Bairstow was offered the role as keeper, he'd take it, wouldn't he?
Oh, of course he would take it. Oh, he would take it, because I still think Johnny wants to keep wicket. But as much as before this series I wanted to get Ollie Pope in my side because I wasn't sure how it was going, and I wanted Bairstow to keep wicket over Folkes, because I thought from a runs point of view we needed them in the middle, and with Pope, the way Johnny's played, let's not complicate matters anymore, Johnny. Just go out and hit the ball. Okay. Forget trying to catch it. Just go out and hit it. I think that ship sailed for the time being, especially the way he's batting.
And he's a very good slipper, and England don't have too many of those, so just let him stand in the slip. So you've been listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be back at the same time next week to reflect on the rearranged fifth test against India, amongst other things. But for now, you've been listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.